Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking, of course, and welcome to another great episode of the Jack Benny Show. This one from 70 years ago. This is the penultimate episode of the season for Jack. I always like to hear people use penultimate the wrong way, but this means penultimate means the episode before the last episode. So here we go. This episode, its title is misleading and makes it seem like it's all going to be about Phil Harris, and you'll find out when you get into it what it's all about, but I do want to take a minute and talk about Phil. Next year is going to be our big year of Phil Harris, because Phil, just by the seasons he was on the show and the way I run the show and show them an episode from 75 years ago, from 70 years ago, from 65 years ago, and from 60 years ago, there's only one season in which Phil will be on all of those, and that's next season. We'll get his very first season on the Jack Benny Show, as well as his very last season on the Jack Benny Show, running in the same year. So that will be kind of fun. We'll get the start of Phil's own show, which will be a lot of fun. Not all the episodes exist from that year. Only about half of them, or maybe even less than that, about 15, I think. But we'll run all those. And, of course, we'll continue running our episodes from Phil's show from 60 years ago. And we'll run those through, too. So you're going to get a lot of Phil each week. You're Phil of Phil each week, I suppose we could say. Anyway, I wanted to revisit. I talked about James Arness, the fact that he died last week, and about his show. And I'd been wanting to have a conversation about this anyway, so I figured we would talk a little bit about Gunsmoke and Jack Benny, and how they relate, that sort of thing. So, let's start with Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke, most successful television dramatic series, or the longest running, ever, I believe. And I think, let's see, it ran for 20 years, from 1955 until 1975. And recently there's been some shows that have gotten, you know, close to it or past it in longevity, but there's different reasons we kind of discount those. One is Law & Order. I believe hit the same amount of years. I believe they hit 20. And the difference being, of course, Law & Order had a lot of cast changes along the way. Nobody that was in the first seasons was in the last seasons. Whereas Gunsmoke, James Arness was in the first episode, and he was in the last episode. He was in virtually all the episodes in between. I'm sure he probably missed a few for being sick or something, or unavailable or whatever, but he was the longest continuing character ever. One that's close to that, or the same, maybe even more, is, who am I thinking of? Frasier Crane, the character of Frasier Crane, played by, I'm drawing a blank on his name, so it goes. But Frasier was, of course, on Cheers, and then got his own show, and so if you combine those, he's at right around the same amount of time as James Arness on Gunsmoke. I think he might even surpass it by a year that he played that character, which is a great feat. But now let's just talk about the show in general. So it goes for 20 years. They unfortunately never add radio in, which I think they should, because radio was a primetime valid format. And I think you should say, okay, Gunsmoke ran for 20 years, but it also ran for 9 years in radio. So you add those two together, you get 29 years. That's impressive. 29 years is a long time. No one's beaten that. Except If you look at Red Skelton, Red Skelton was on television for 20 years, and he was on radio. When you add those two things together, I think you end up with about 33 years that he was on altogether, which is really impressive. And nobody can tie that or beat that. Except if you look at Mary Livingston, she was on the Jack Benny Show starting in 32 and went on she was on all the radio shows, which is about 23 years of radio, I believe, that Jack did. And she's also on all the television shows up to 1960 season. So if you add all that up, that's 33 years, which is about the same as Red Skelton, which is pretty impressive for Mary. But if you look at Don, he ran until the final year of the television show. So I think his run is about 35 years. Very impressive, Don. And then we have Jack. Jack was on for the 23 years of radio, the 15 years on television, giving him a total of about 38 years, maybe 37 if I'm off, but 37, 38 years. And that truly is outstanding, and no one's come close to that kind of entertainment length of time on prime time. This is not, you know, an actor that becomes a character actor and has tremendous longevity through being a leading actor and then a character actor. This is someone who was the lead from 1932 until 1965. That's a long time. Now, one thing that benefits him for, if we figure out seasons, is that the radio and television kind of overlapped for a few years, so he was getting double seasons for that 5-year overlap, which helps him to get that kind of numbers, but still, tremendously, tremendously impressive. As a last thing for our podcast, I wanted to say thank you so very much to all of you wonderful folks who continue to email me, say great things, make wonderful comments. Love all the folks that mention how much they enjoy these introductions and everything, and that's great. And I have been spending more time with my family. You may have noticed my introductions have gotten, other than today's, have gotten a little bit shorter, and maybe where I'm talking about other things besides the episode, because then I don't have to do as much research on the episode, and I can just kind of talk and record these ahead of time and tag them onto the episodes. Now, as far as recording them ahead of time, sometimes I'm up to a week ahead. Right now, this is basically live. I mean, I'm recording this today, and it's going to go out today. So, anyway, but I'll try and get a few days ahead here. I want to say thank you to all those folks that have been saying all the nice things. Thank you to all my donators who've been donating to the podcast. Really has helped out. We're getting closer and closer to me being able to purchase some extra bandwidth for us for this month. And if you haven't noticed, I called a podcast, I said a few podcasts ago, and talked to them, and they, you know, couldn't give me what I wanted, but they were able to zero out my account for the month, so it's equivalent to giving me a bunch more bandwidth for just this month. So we're running 100 episodes instead of our normal 15 or 10, so you can go back if you've missed some old episodes. This is a great time for you to find them if you're on iTunes. Scroll down where you usually can only scroll down to about 15 episodes. Now you can scroll down to 100 episodes that we have available in the podcast. Goodness, I just keep going. I remember one more thing. Of course, join us next week for our last Jack Benny from this season. But beyond that, we'll be switching over to our war years right where we left off from the previous season. I think it's right where we left off. It's kind of hard to tell, but it'll be within a month or so. And what I'm going to do, though, in trying to keep minimizing how many podcasts I do and minimizing how much shows I have to post, I'm going to wait until a night has no new episodes. So let's take Tuesday, for example. Tuesday, I play Suspense, and I play Jack Benny. Well, this last week was the last Jack Benny show of the season on Tuesdays. So next Tuesday, there'll be no Jack Benny show. But I'll be posting that suspense. Once suspense runs out for the season, then I'll start filling that Tuesday slot with a Warriors show. But as long as I still just have suspense, you'll just get suspense. So you might only get one episode a day for a while, but once it dwindles down to none, you'll get a war episode. So anyway, enjoy. Stick with us this summer. It's going to be fun. And enjoy this episode of the Jack Benny Show.
The Jell-O program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Beat Me Daddy with a Pickled Beat. Did you ever go out into an orchard, ladies and gentlemen, and pick fresh, ripe fruit right off the trees? Juicy, bright-colored fruit still warm with the summer sun? Well, it's just such pleasant memories as this that come to mind when you enjoy Jell-O. For Jell-O actually rivals the real ripe fruit itself, both in color and refreshment. Jell-O's gay, scintillating colors make Jell-O a tempting and attractive dessert. A dessert that always adds lots of charm and good cheer to every meal. And in Jell-O's full-body, tantalizing flavor, you experience a delight that's simply unexcelled. A tangy goodness that you'll insist on enjoying again and again. So get Jell-O tomorrow in all of Jell-O's six delicious flavors, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Just one taste of this grand treat, and you'll know right away why rich, shimmering, genuine Jell-O is America's favorite gelatin dessert. Beat Me Daddy with a Pickled Beat, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the next to the final broadcast of the season, we bring you a man who came to you last October fresh as a daisy and is now standing here faded as a fuchsia, Jack Benny.
Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, I'm sure glad we've only got one more program to do. After 35 consecutive weeks of broadcasting, I'm worn out. Boy, I'm all in.
Oh, Jack, radio isn't as tough as all that. When you come right down to it, you only broadcast one day a week.
I know, Don, but think of all the preparation, the jokes, and the new ideas I have to have. I tell you, I'm exhausted.
Well, you've got writers, haven't you?
You mean Corn and Pone? Writers. A fine team. I bought them a typewriter the other day, and they did a maypole dance with a ribbon. A lot of help they are.
Where'd you ever find those boys, Jack? Were they professional writers when you picked them up?
No, they were just a couple of fast talkers. I met them in a drugstore in New York. One of them used to demonstrate hair tonic, and the other one drank it. Anyway, they told me they were writers, so I hired them, and I've been sorry ever since.
Well, Jack, if they don't do their work properly, why don't you get rid of them? Why don't you fire them?
No, I'm going to give them one more chance, Don. But if I don't grow hair by next year, out they go. No jokes, no hair, no wonder I'm tired.
Oh, Jack, you always have to make such a big issue out of everything.
What?
To hear you talk, anybody think you work like a dog.
Well, that's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. Why, Mary, do you realize what 35 weeks in radio takes out of me?
Well, you take something out of radio, don't you?
That's not the point. That doesn't tire me. It's the work I have to do. Just lucky that I have a good constitution and the strain doesn't show.
Not much. You're as washed out as a teabag in a boarding house.
Well, that doesn't make sense because a used teabag is tan and I'm as pale as a ghost. Now, you know what it's from, don't you? It's those weeks and weeks of hard grinding labor.
Labor? Do you call what you do labor?
Well, choo, 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 if it isn't the Honeymoon Express. What did you say, baby? That's what she calls them, folks. What did you say?
Look, Jackson, I've been listening to this chatter, and I don't know what you're beeping about. You only do one broadcast a week, don't you?
Yes, but I...
And that runs a half hour, right?
Yes, but I get more lines than anyone else on the program.
That's because you buy more hair tonic.
Mary, I'm talking to Phil.
And another thing, Jackson, out of that half hour, Don Wilson does two commercials.
Yes, but...
And Dennis Day sings a song.
I know, but...
And the boys and I do 10 minutes of music.
You do 10 minutes of. Let's not classify it. Music, he calls it.
Well, Alice thinks my band is wonderful.
Phil, Alice is a dear, sweet girl, and she's entitled to her opinion. But love is blind, and in this case, also deaf. Anyway, Phil, I don't know what you're driving at.
What he means, Jack, is this. When you boil it down, you personally work on this program only 13 minutes a week.
What?
Imagine, only 13 minutes.
Well, it's not the time involved, Don. It's the importance. For your information, it only took George Washington 12 minutes to cross the Delaware.
How do you know?
Jack was rowing the boat.
I was not. I missed it. I mean, I wasn't in the boat. Now, let me tell you guys something else.
Hello, everybody. What's all the excitement?
Oh, this gang. Hello, Dennis.
What's the matter?
Jack's complaining because he has to work 13 minutes a week.
Oh, where's he working?
At the Acme Buttonhole Factory in Extra Pants, Nebraska. Where am I working? I was just telling the gang that the strain of broadcasting week after week has made a wreck out of me.
Me too. I'd have a nervous breakdown if I could find a sanitarium that would take tenors.
Dennis, what have you got to be tired about? You don't have that mental strain every week like I do.
Well, I suppose it doesn't take brains to sing a song.
No, not necessarily. Crickets can sing, and they don't have any brains.
Pardon me, Jack, pardon me. Crickets don't exactly sing. Their song comes from rubbing their hind legs together.
Oh.
Say, I'll have to try that sometime.
Do, Dennis, and let me know how it comes out. Meanwhile, let's have your song in the old-fashioned way. We're about ready.
Okay.
What's it going to be?
I'm going to sing You and I, a brand new number written by Mary Beth Wilson.
That's Meredith Wilson. He's a conductor on the Maxwell House program.
Oh.
Now go ahead. Hold it a minute. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I wonder if your writers would sell me a bottle of hair tonic.
I imagine they would. Do you want to grow hair?
Yes, I'm tired of the wind and the rain in my scalp.
Oh, get out of here. You know, every time I see his head, I feel like sticking my finger in his ear and bowling. Well, go ahead and sing, Dennis.
With my legs on my tonsils.
With your tonsils. Forget about that cricket.
Poet and musician sing the same old tune to the sweethearts that come and go. Let your intuition, aided by the moon, tell you little things a poet doesn't know. Darling, you and I know the reason why a summer sky is blue. And we know why birds in the trees sing melodies too, and why love will grow from the first hello until the sweet romance, there is just one first hello until the last goodbye. So to sweet romance, there is just one answer.
Was You and I, sung by Kenny Baker. And very good, Kenny. You know, a song like that is especially good for your type of...
Kenny Baker? I'm Dennis Day, ain't I?
What? Oh, certainly. What's the matter with me? See, fellas, I'm so tired and nervous, I don't know what I'm talking about. You guys think I don't need a rest. You're all so smart. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
You're not mad because I'm not Kenny Baker, are you?
No, Dennis, I'm just confused, that's all. I'm irritable because I'm tired. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
If you think Kenny Baker can rub his hind legs together, why don't you get him?
Dennis, will you please stop interrupting? Now go crawl under the piano.
Okay, see you later.
And now, folks... What a kid. And now, folks, Mr. Don Wilson, that eminent American playwright... has written another of his famous one-act plays. Take it, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, before proceeding, I would like to announce that any resemblance in this play to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
That's right.
The play opens in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Filbert Harris. Now, Jack Benny will play the part...
Hey, wait a minute. I object. I don't want any play about my personal life, bud.
What's this got to do with you? Phil, the character in our play is Filbert Harris, not Phil. There's no connection. Go ahead, Don.
Filbert, an orchestra leader, has just finished playing a one-night stand on the sidewalk in front of the Ambassador Hotel.
Uh-huh.
Hey, now, hold it a minute. This guy's an orchestra leader, and I'm an orchestra leader. I smell a rat.
Well, it's not you. Continue, Don.
As the scene opens, Filbert's newly wedded wife, played by Miss Livingston, is at home waiting for her husband, Filbert, played by Mr. Benny. It is dinner time. Curtain, music.
Oh, dear, I hope Daddy isn't late. I prepared this meal for him with my own little hands. Gosh, look at that salad. I wonder if the lettuce goes under the tomatoes or over the tomatoes. Oh, well. That must be baby now. Come in.
Well, well, well. Hiya, honey. Are you jiving? Are you on the beam? Are you solid?
Now, hold on there, Jackson. That guy is me. I talk like that.
Quiet. I'm telling you, this is a fictitious character. I'll take it again, Mary. Hiya, honey. Are you jiving? Are you on the beam? What's cooking, baby?
Ham hocks and butter beans.
Now you're in business, honey. Yeah. Now you're operating. Yeah.
Well, sit down, Phil.
Mary.
Bert.
Say, honey, this food is okay, but where are them whipped potatoes you said he was going to make?
We aren't having any. I couldn't find the whip.
Nice going, honey. That's a Lulu. You're in there punching, Alice.
Alice? Now I got you. That's my wife's name.
Phil, this Alice is A-L-Y-C-E. How does your wife spell her name?
Well, wait a minute. I'll call her up.
Believe me, it's A-L-I-C-E. There's no connection.
Go ahead, Jack. It's your line.
Oh, yes. Say, honey, are we having black-eyed peas with candied yams for dessert?
No, baby, we're having Jell-O.
Jell-O? Well, doggone, dish me, honey, dish me. Yeah.
Not till you've had your ham hocks.
All right, baby, I'll eat them ham hocks, but I'm going to save plenty of room for Jell-O. Yeah.
So you see, ladies, if you're hep and want to keep in solid with your husband, serve him a dish of tempting, appetizing Jell-O. It comes in 6 delicious flavors: strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. They're all Lulu!
Attaboy, Don. Attaboy. There, you see, Phil, aren't you ashamed of yourself? That play had absolutely no connection with you.
Well, I wish the quiz kids was here so I could check on that.
Don't worry about it. Well, Don, that was a very original playlet. And incidentally, while we're on our vacation, why don't you write up a few more for next season?
I'll try to. By the way, Jack, speaking of vacations, what are you doing this summer? You going out of town?
Well, Don, I intended to go to one of those big fashionable resorts. You know, where you have to dress for dinner and throw your money away. But I changed my mind.
You know how Jack hates to dress for dinner.
Yeah. So instead of that, Don, I intend to rough it. I'm going to a little place in the High Sierras called Eagle Nook Lodge and just fish my head off. It's way, way up in the mountains.
How high is the place, Jackson?
$3 a day. Oh, you mean the altitude. It's about 7,000 feet, but it's ideal for me. Just give me a mountain stream and a fishing rod, and, brother, those trout better watch out.
Oh, sure.
You wait and see.
You couldn't catch a herring in Lindy's with Abe Lyman for bait.
Mary, one more word out of you, and I'm going to trade you in for a station wagon. So cut it out. Well, so much for my vacation. Now, how about a number, Phil?
Okay, Jackson.
Oh, Jack, I meant to ask you, who's taking over our show for the summer?
Well, Don, the sponsor has a brand new program lined up called Regular Fellas. And it's adapted from Gene Byrne's famous comic strip of that name. You know, Puddinhead Duffy, Jimmy Dugan, and all those kids.
Oh, yes. Well, that sounds like it ought to be a lot of fun.
It'll be a swell show, Don, and I wish Regular Fellas a lot of luck on their summer series. Well, go ahead, Phil. Let's have your number. Now what? Come in.
Mr. Benny, I still can't find your writers. Where are they?
Look, Bud, it's none of my business, but I'm afraid hair tonic won't help you. How'd you lose your hair, anyway?
I pulled off a tight hat too quick.
Hair tonic. What that guy needs is a mop with a part in it. Play, Philip. There'll Be Some Changes Made, played by Phil Harris and his All-American Rhythm Kings. American Rhythm Kings meaning a perfect description of this outstanding musical organization, and all meaning I take it all back. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce that next Sunday our final broadcast of the season will originate from the Naval Training Station in San Diego, California.
Oh, San Diego.
San Diego. San Diego.
Yes, sir. And incidentally, fellas, you know, I used to be in the Navy, and this will be a kind of a reunion for me.
I thought you were in the Army, Mr. Benny.
No, Dennis, the Navy.
Don't you remember? He was in that boat with George Washington.
Mary, I take an oath. I never even knew George Washington. Please believe me. But no kidding, fellas. Sometimes I regret ever having left the Navy. Gee, with that blue suit and my blue eyes, I was really something.
You really liked the service, huh, Jack?
I certainly did, Don. And I was getting along swell. Who knows, if I'd have stuck, I might have been an admiral today. With my chest just covered with medals.
How could you hold them up?
Mary, I really need a station wagon. Anyway, I was just talking about what might have been. You know, fellas, I often wonder if... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Oh, what do you want?
Boss, if you don't get our boat out of the house, I'm leaving. That man's getting crazier every day.
Oh, for goodness sake, you're always worried about Mr. Billingsley. What's the matter now?
Well, he's been planning his summer vacation all day long.
All right, what's crazy about that?
He's out in the swimming pool right now taking swimming lessons. He's learning the Australian crawl.
Well, what's crazy about that?
He's going to swim to Australia.
Now, that's ridiculous. Mr. Billingsley is obviously kidding you. He can't be serious about swimming to Australia.
Oh, he means it, boss. He told me to meet him at the dock at San Pedro early tomorrow morning.
Oh, my God. What does he need you for?
He wants me to hit him on the head with a bottle of champagne.
Well, use the domestic, not the imported. Now, look, Rochester, don't let him leave the house. It's up to you to humor him.
Uh-huh.
Explain to him that he's not a boat.
That'll be pretty hard to do, boss. He's wearing two hats.
Two hats?
Yeah, he claims the top one is a poop deck.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, Rochester, keep him in the backyard by the swimming pool. And whatever you do, don't let him get away.
Too late, boss. There he goes.
Well, catch him, stop him, humor him. Tell him before he leaves he's got to take on cargo.
He's loaded now.
Well, Rochester, do something. Lock the front door. I'll be home right after the broadcast.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
What?
Are you going to broadcast from San Diego next Sunday?
Yes.
Am I going with you?
Yes, Rochester, you're going to drive me down in the Maxwell. What are you laughing at?
If that Maxwell can get to San Diego, Mr. Billingsley's a cinch for Australia.
Never mind. And don't worry, we'll make it. Now, goodbye. Doggone Mr. Billingsley really thinks he's a boat. I'll have to put a sign on his door, Pier 18. Ladies and gentlemen, we have saved a few minutes of our program this evening to bring you a message from a distinguished guest, one of the nation's outstanding Americans. A call has gone out, a call which concerns the very defense of America, one which affects vitally the morale of the 1.5 million men already called to the colors. Realizing this serious situation, the President of the United States, the Secretaries of War and of the Navy, and the Federal Security Administrator have called upon every American to support the United Service Organizations. Mr. Thomas E. Dewey has been drafted as National Campaign Chairman of the USO. So, ladies and gentlemen, I have the honor and pleasure to present at this time the District Attorney of New York City, Mr. Thomas E. Dewey.
Thank you, Jack. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm mighty happy to be with you tonight. Now, Jack, after that fine introduction, I'd like to ask you something. What do you know about the USO?
Well, Mr. Dewey, I think, well, let's see, it's got something to do with soldiers or sailors. You know, if I'd have stayed in the Navy, I might have been an admiral today. Admiral Benny.
I know, Admiral. I heard your program.
Oh.
Jack, I'm afraid you don't know very much about the USO. But then, neither do a lot of other Americans. Briefly, the USO is a joint effort on the part of the YMCA, the YWCA, Salvation Army, National Catholic Community Service, Jewish Welfare Board, and the Traveler's Aid to bring to the soldier, sailor, and marine recreational and hospitality facilities outside the cantonments.
Oh, so the USO doesn't work in the camps themselves?
No, Admiral. I mean, Jack.
Yes.
The service clubs will be all located outside the camps and bases. I've just visited in the last 2 weeks, in traveling over 9,000 miles, more than 21 of the camps. Imagine some of these places with 30,000 men cooped up in a camp, and the nearest town has 1,700 men, women, and babies. When they get a day off, the men have no place to go and nothing to do. It's a pretty serious business when we transplant 1.5 million men from their homes and then leave them to think we've forgotten all about them. These men must know that 130 million Americans are really behind them.
Yes, Mr. Dewey, that's a swell idea. It's going to cost a lot of money, though, isn't it?
Not as much as you'd think. With the help of every real American, we can do a grand job for a little more than $10 million.
Well, but that won't build recreational centers, will it?
No, the federal government is supplying the buildings. It's up to the USO to get the funds to operate the clubs.
Well, how are you going to get this $10 million?
In every community in the United States, right now, the USO is organizing an appeal for funds. On June 3rd, the drive starts with a broadcast from every part of the country to dinners all over the country. Every American, regardless of his views on foreign policies or anything else, can unite on this job and through the USO get behind his own defenders. Thank you, Jack, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Tom Dewey. We appreciate your coming to us and telling us about the United Service Organization. I understand that we have contributed over $60 million to help those abroad. And this is the first time we have ever been asked to help our own American boys. I'm sure everyone realizes that taking care of our boys is our job. And I assure you, we Americans will do it.
Here's a grand dessert, ladies and gentlemen, that's not only delightfully unusual, but unusually delightful. A real novelty and a real treat. It's Jell-O's latest dessert triumph, Jell-O Shallows. Something mighty good the whole family will enjoy. It's inexpensive, too, and of course, like all desserts you make with Jell-O, easy to prepare. Simply make up a package of cherry Jell-O as you usually do and chill until slightly thickened. Next, hollow out the centers of a dozen cupcakes and fill with the slightly thickened Jell-O. Then chill until firm and serve with a topping of snowy white whipped cream. And just watch the family response to this tempting new dessert surprise. So different and so delicious. Get a package of cherry Jell-O and make up this swell dessert. You'll find the cherry Jell-O, like strawberry and raspberry Jell-O, has a new improved flavor obtained by using a natural flavor base artificially enhanced. And this means a flavor that's better than ever. A rich, distinctive goodness that you find only in genuine Jell-O. So treat yourself to a new treat. Tomorrow night for dinner, serve Jell-O Shallow, a luscious combination of dainty cupcakes and shiny, ruby-red cherry Jell-O.
The last number of the 34th program in the current Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time, doing our final broadcast from the Naval Training Station in San Diego. And after that, be sure and tune in every Sunday night to our sparkling summer show, Regular Fellas. Oh, Mary.
Yes, Jack.
I'm all in. Will you say goodnight for me?
Sure. Good night, folks.
Thanks.
Here's a snappy new dessert, Ginger Snap Ice Cream. Where do you buy it? Well, you can't buy it, but you can make it right in your own automatic refrigerator with vanilla Jell-O freezing mix. Just take a can of vanilla Jell-O freezing mix and make up a freezing tray full of smooth, luscious, homemade vanilla ice cream. Then, when you stir it, add 3/4 of a cup of golden, spicy ginger snaps broken into bits. Making it at home is the easy way and the only way. So get vanilla Jell-O freezing mix tomorrow. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Texaco Star Theater. The more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast welcome you to an hour of mirth and melody. With our star comedian, Fred Allen. Kenny Baker and Portland Hoffa. Our guest, Dr. Elias Bodenweiser, famous horse dentist. Wynn Murray and Al Goodman's orchestra. It's Texaco time. Ladies and gentlemen, if there is a joke told on this program, you know who tells it. This program, if it is a program, is a one-man show, if it is a show. And here is the one man, if he is a man. Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Say, Jimmy, did I detect a note of bitterness in your introduction?
Yes,
was that remark about my telling all of the jokes tinctured, let us say, a mite with the essence of salt?
Yes.
Sulking? Are you putting on a pout?
Yes, I...
Well, what's wrong?
What's wrong? The same routine every week, fed up.
What?
The diet... What do I ever get to...
Yes.
I never get a joke to tell. You know, I can get laughs, too.
Well, all right, Jimmy. I didn't know you felt that way about it. You think you can get a laugh? Now, there's a joke here coming up here, the next two lines. It's my joke, but you can go right ahead. You.
Oh, gee, thanks.
Oh, that's all right, Jimmy. Now, read this joke. It's on.
Okay, here it goes. Why have all the women out in hot stocking slacks? She, 20 women out here were drafted by mistake.
Well, all right. Now, you've told your joke. Now, nothing happened. Now you satisfied?
Well, look, can I give me a down? You tell a gag like that. Well, a juicy dialogue for yourself.
All right, you old fudge. A juicy dialogue. I'll give you my personal dialogue. Now, these next lines right here were written especially for me by a man who lives under glass most of the time. Just comes out once a week and writes these two lines for me. Now, you go ahead. You can read them, James.
Okay, Fred. Here comes.
Go right ahead.
Wait. Papa comes down. That's it, son. Comes the late week.
Well, there you are, Jimmy.
Now, wait just a minute. That was no joke. That was a fan too. I get a...
Oh, now, don't blame the lines. It was your delivery. You can't read them. You don't know how. Well, you're just not a comedian.
I suppose you can get a laugh with those same lines.
Yes, I think I can. Now, listen. I'll read the very same lines. And here it is, the latest news of the week.
Well, I'll be...
You certainly will. And when you convince yourself, it'll be unanimous. And now that you... And now the Texaco... The Texaco... Now, don't laugh. Your mustache hangs down and it looks awful when you laugh. Keep your lip up, if you will. The Texaco News presents the highlight from the world of news. Washington, D.C., Associated Press Index of Industrial Activity shows sharp rise in nation's business gains for fifth consecutive week. Since index only shows increase in big business, Texaco News interviews the little businessman to check on increases, if any, in the retail trade. Now, first, we turn to agriculture and question a man about farm, Fergus Till. How is your farming outlook, Fergus?
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
How do you mean?
Well, up to 2 years ago, my business was hunky-dory. I was going great gun.
I see.
Then he started changing his mind, and I was sunk.
Well, but how...
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
If who would make up whose mind?
I'll explain.
Well, I wish you would.
I will.
Fine.
Quit butting in.
Whoa, excuse me.
Quiet, please.
Well, all right, I'm shut.
It's about time. Now, where was I?
Well, you were talking about your business.
Oh, yes. I grow cranberries.
You grow cranberries?
Got the biggest bog in Jersey.
The biggest bog, huh?
I can grow and pick 2,000 bushels.
Well, good for you.
For 20 years, I had my cranberry crop timed to the day.
Well, how do you mean, time?
Well, my crop ripened the last week in November, just in time for Thanksgiving Day. My cranberries was fresh from the bog.
Oh, I see.
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
His mind about what?
Thanksgiving!
Oh, you mean...
Yes, 2 years ago, he moved Thanksgiving up a week.
Yes?
My cranberries was timed.
They ripened a week late?
2,000 bushels. I'm left holding the bog.
What about this year?
Well, this year I timed my cranberries so they'd ripen a week sooner. So what does he do?
What?
Last week he moved Thanksgiving back again.
Yes?
This year, I'm going to have 2,000 bushels of cranberries ripe a week too soon.
Your business is all mixed up.
If he'd only make up his mind, I'd know where I am.
Well, tell me, Fergus, when you're stuck with 2,000 bushels of cranberries on Thanksgiving like that, now, what do you do?
Wait till Christmas.
Yeah?
Shrink the cranberries?
Uh-huh.
Sell them for Holly.
It's still the berries, and thank you, Fergus Till. Now, a man with plenty of troubles, Mr. Sigmund Toffee. What business are you in, Sigmund?
I run a pet shop.
A pet shop. And how do you find the pettery business?
Oh, it's brutal, brother.
But conditions are improving. Why should you have a slump?
Well, I'll tell you. I got two big bloodhounds in this shop. They got appetites like horses. When I was doing good... They ate up all the profits.
They ate the profits, really?
Yeah, sometimes I'd have a big week. Maybe I'd sell a snake or a honey bear.
Yeah?
Out the money would go for dog meat.
And now?
Business is tough. I gotta cut down on the bloodhounds.
What do you feed them now?
Well, during the day, I don't feed them nothing.
Oh, you wait until night?
Yeah, when it gets dark, I take the two bloodhounds up to the zoo.
And?
I throw them over the fence. Then I wait till they're finished eating.
Oh, on the city, huh? But how does this affect your business?
Well, all week long, I keep the bloodhounds going at the zoo.
Yeah?
Saturday night, I lock up the pet shop.
Uh-huh.
During Sunday, the bloodhounds get hungry.
And?
I open up Monday morning.
Uh-huh.
No matter how many animals I left in the shop Saturday night, Monday morning, I got two bloodhounds.
You mean they keep eating your stock?
Every week I'm getting mice, rabbits, canaries, and mongooses on credit.
I see.
All week long I don't sell nothing. Saturday night I lock up my mongooses, canaries, and rabbits.
And?
Monday morning I got two bloodhounds.
Well, how long has this been going on?
6 months.
And despite the fact that business is booming all over...
With me, everything's gone to the dogs.
The bloodhounds. It shouldn't happen to a man, and thank you, thank you, Sigmund Toffee. A businesswoman from downtown is Mrs. Dolores Buxbaum. Now, what business are you in, Mrs. Buxbaum?
Formerly, I'm running a delicatessen. The salami saloon.
You mean salami salon, don't you?
Salon, saloon. I am closing it down.
Well, why?
The delicatessen is old-timey. Corny could be the word for it.
The delicatessen is through.
Positively. The old dirty liverwurst hanging on the door. The pickle battle with flies making convoys for the pickles. All of this is passé, taboo. Also, it is unsanitary.
Oh, I see.
Today, Dimas is wanting southern cuisine. This, Dolores Bugs Baum is serving.
So instead of the salami salon, today your restaurant is called...
Mammy Bugs Baum's You All Southern Chicken Fry, You All.
And what food do you serve?
Southern dishes only. Corn prone.
Corn prone.
Candied yammers.
Candied yammers.
Chicken barbecue.
Chicken barbecue. Delicious. And how is business?
Always by Mammy Bugs Baum at his pet.
Well, would you say the general conditions have improved your business?
This together with advertising.
Ah, advertising. What sort?
Leaving the subway at Canal Street, a sign is reading...
What?
You are liking southern cooking. Go straight ahead and keep on looking.
Then you have another sign straight ahead?
This is saying... For home-cooked food with nothing fancy, time right here, go up Delancey.
And your next sign reads...
It's coming closer to Good Corn Pone. Across the street, it's next to Cone.
And the next sign?
You are there.
And how does your last sign read?
This is it. We wouldn't lie. Mammy Bugs Baum's Chicken Fry, you all.
Well, thank you very much, Mammy Bugs Baum. You all. Thank you. And from these little businessmen, we turn to a young man whose business is vending focal wares, Kenny Baker. Kenny's first sample tonight is Walking by the River.
Someone there tonight.
delay. So hurry on your way, my friend. If you don't get there soon, there may not be a moon to guide you to that happy end. My heart is riding high. My blues have taken flight. I'm walking by the river, 'cause I'm meeting someone there tonight.
Thank you, Kenny. And now a word from Larry Elliott. Proceed, Lawrence.
Go easy on that Lawrence stuff, Fred, or I'll haul off and call you John F. Sullivan.
John F. Sullivan?
I was talking to H. Allen Smith, the author of Low Man on a Totem Pole.
Yeah.
And he told me that...
Hell, Larry, people never invited me out. They were afraid I'd start a fight all the time.
Well, it just goes to show how much there is in a name, Fred. Sullivan's a fighting name.
Yeah.
Makes you think of boxing. And in the same way, Texaco Sky Chief is a flying name. It makes you think of soaring power, of smooth, almost effortless motion.
Yes, I guess it does.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, with this pleasant idea of Sky Chief in mind, try a tank full and enjoy the on travel. With this different premium gasoline, you'll sense in your car a new eagerness to take off, a soaring ease on the level road. You'll feel its quick upsurge to the challenge of a hill, its flexibility when you throttle down to a slow glide in traffic. Let the name Sky Chief tell you, you'll enjoy more than just driving. You'll fly the highway with this Texaco pre for those who want the best.
Thank you.
Mr. Goodman and his rumba rabble have just played Adios. And now, ladies and gentlemen, oh, the door, it's always something. Come in.
What time is it? What time is it?
It's 9:20.
Thank you.
Just a minute. Who are you?
I'm Bulliver.
Bulliver yet. Anything to give me a headache. Oh, come in.
You have a headache?
Yes.
Here's a seltzer. Oh, shucks. I thought I had a seltzer, but I haven't.
But just a second. Who are you?
I'm Alka.
Well, that's radio. Bulliver doesn't know what time it is, and Alka hasn't got a seltzer. Oh, hello, Portland.
Hello.
Well, don't... I wish you wouldn't bother me now. I've got other worries.
Oh, all right. I'll go over in the corner and do my knitting.
Oh, you're knitting? What are you knitting?
Well, I don't know yet.
You don't? Well, if you're knitting, you certainly ought to know what you're making.
Well, I started to knit a sock. I opened it.
Oh, but did it happen?
It kept slipping.
It came out. Well, what are you?
I kept knitting, and it's like a leg.
After the sleep came out. Well, how long have you been working on this masterpiece?
I've been knitting 4 months.
4 straight months, huh? Uh-huh. And what does it look like now?
Do you think Don Wilson could use a sleeping bag?
Yes, sir, I... You think about that good, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
We could have put a commercial in between those two words there. Sleeping. Yes, sir, if you ever fall on the point of one of those dull jokes of yours, what was the idea? What was the short pause for station identification? You want to read it over again and try it over? Because then you'll have it right for midnight, you know. What does it look like now?
Do you think Don Wilson could use a sleeping bag?
No, I think he took the first one you offered him. Well, it's a fine thing. There's one thing about nobody will know who's the straight man tonight, anyway. But you'd better quit knitting, Portland. You'll end up like the cross-eyed woman who knitted a sweater for her husband, and he had to have his arms broken before he could put it on. The waist was a sweater, and the arms were two casts. He looked very well in it. Now, what about... But enough hilarity, enough hilarity. Now, what about our guest?
He is America's foremost horse dentist. Mr. Allen, meet Dr. Elias Bodenweiser.
Well, good evening, Dr. Bodenweiser. Portland tells me Dr. Bodenweiser was off in the yonder there in the stable. Well, Portland tells me, Dr. Bodenweiser, that you are, by profession, a practicing horse dentist.
That's correct.
And how long have you been engaged in this unique calling?
Practically all of my life.
And approximately, how long has that been, Doctor?
Well, I'm 75 years old.
You are 75 years old? You certainly don't look it. Why, Doctor, you look 10 years younger than Jack Benny right here and now. Why, you've got more hair and one eyebrow than Benny has on that whole honeydew head of his. But tell me, Dr. Bodenweiser, how does one go about becoming a stallion bicuspid authority?
I started out as a veterinary and finally decided to specialize in dentistry.
Well, did they have veterinary schools way back when you launched your career?
Oh, yes. I graduated from the Dr. Leotard Veterinary School.
It was sort of a horse Harvard, hey? Well, did they have degrees at that school, you know, B.S., Bachelor of Spavin? Or did they have fraternities like Phi Beta Coulter?
No, we all got diplomas the same as any other couple.
I see. And now that you are saving the great American steed from pink toothbrush and receding gums, where do you practice?
Mostly at racetracks and in larger private stables.
Well, it must be rather difficult practicing horse dentistry.
How do you mean, Fred?
Well, when a horse has a toothache, he can't put his hoof in his mouth and show you which tooth hurts, can he?
It's easy, Fred. I can generally look in a horse's mouth and tell what the trouble is right away.
Well, tell me, does the mouth-happy horse go to see his dentist twice a year.
No, in my profession, it's the dentist goes to see the horse, the patient.
But it must be. You have a choice there with the dollar dent. Say, it must be a gala day in the stables, Doctor, when you come charging in, your forceps akimbo, your dental floss streaming in the breeze, your drill stripped for action.
I don't use a drill, Fred. Horses don't have cavities.
Why, with all that sugar they eat and not massaging their gums, why, I should think a horse's mouth would be a tusk shambles.
No, the average horse has a healthy mouth.
What dental attention does a horse require, Doctor?
Once a year, the teeth need filing.
Why?
The enamel grows into sharp points, and if not filed down, the points cut the cheek and the tongue.
Well, what about extractions? Now, do horses ever lose a fang?
Yes, I'm pulling them all the time.
You're pulling teeth all the time? Really? Well, what do you do with your old horse teeth, Doctor?
I just throw them away.
You just throw them away, huh? Why, you ought to keep them. You can sell horse teeth to nearsighted elks for their vet.
I never thought of that, Fred.
Oh, yes. A lot of nearsighted elks go all through life always brushing off their vests. They keep mistaking those little elk teeth for tapioca. They're always brushing. But tell me, Doctor, isn't it rather risky making an extraction?
Not at all.
Have you ever started to extract a horse's tooth and have the horse then start to extract one of your fingers?
No, I'm very careful, and my forceps are 22 inches long.
Forceps are 22 inches long. Well, do you use the old dentist bromides when you're extracting, you know, like the dentist says, open a little wider, please. This isn't going to hurt a bit.
No, I just keep the horse's mouth open and my mouth shut.
That's a wise procedure, Doctor. I wish I had a horse so I could practice it. But tell me, Dr. Bodenweiser, what other dental work do you do besides filing and extraction?
I treat abscesses, broken jaw bones, and sometimes put caps on broken teeth.
I guess you must feel pretty good down at the track when one of your patients runs by in a race, sees you, and flashes his new inlay or bridge at you.
Horses don't get inlays and bridge work.
Well, right? I wouldn't know, Doctor. I've never even looked a gift horse in the mouth. But working around at the tracks, I imagine you've attended some of the famous racehorses.
Yes, I've worked on War Admiral, Man of War, and many others. But half the time, I don't know what horse I'm working on.
Why is that?
When I'm working over a stable of horses, they all look alike to me.
Well, naturally, you've got your head down in their mouths all the time. Now, you ought to take your head out and look around once in a while. There is a great difference between some horses, Doctor.
What's the difference, Fred?
That's what I say, Doctor. What's the difference? Why bother with it? Well, now, do you ever find it necessary to give your patients Novocaine?
Not in dentistry, Fred.
Well, some people must give their horses anesthetics. If those... the doctor told me to give up tea, and I'm leaving it out of all the words. All he lets me have is a little bag for the knees of my pants, and outside of that... Well, what's the difference? Do you ever find it necessary? Anesthetics. I'll find the place. I'm coming. Track is muddy here. I'm coming along slowly. If those plugs of Crosby's aren't Novocaine from the hips down, Doctor, I'm crazy. Well, it's certainly been nice of you to stop by and horse around tonight, Doctor.
It's been a pleasure, Fred.
Say, confidentially, Doctor, what looks good in the third at Belmont tomorrow?
I wouldn't know, Fred.
What? Why, you, a horse dentist, should certainly be able to give me a winner.
Why?
You're the one man at the track who can get his information straight from the horse's mouth. I thought
That's
you...
very good, Fred.
I thought you'd enjoy it. Thank you and good night, Doctor.
Good night.
Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Wynne Murray. Wynne is starting her second week at the Radio City Music Hall tomorrow. Royally, she fits us into her big scheme of things. Here to sing Play, Play, Tina.
play your happy song about a boy and girl whose love was oh so strong. Play it low. Let the whole world know how he wooed the gypsy sonner, how he wooed her till he won her, and they went. Play, Tina. Let your ocarina tell how he and she then raised a family. Oh, would for you and me instead of they. Oh, play, Tina, play. The family, oh, would for you and me instead of they. Oh, play, Tina, play.
Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, with your kind permission, I would like to read a message directed to our more than 45,000 Texaco dealers. Quote, the Texas Company has just donated this hour of radio time from July 1st to October 1st to the government. It is to be used by the United States Treasury Department to promote the sale of defense savings bonds and stamps. You Texaco dealers can further add to this investment in America. You are in business in cities, towns, and hamlets in every section of our country. You come in contact with millions of fellow Americans, those who travel along your way, and those who live in your communities. You, the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers, and those employed in turn by you, comprise a great civilian defense army on every highway and byway. So let this hour of your network time, donated to the government, be a symbol of the individual time and personal investment you will each put behind America's defense program. As a great group in constant touch with the public, Texaco dealers can do much to further the sale of defense bonds and stamps. So, Texaco dealers, let's go to work for Uncle Sam.
Mexico Star Theater continues immediately after a short pause for your station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York, 880 on your dial.
That was just a little bit south of North Carolina, played by more musicians than Maestro Goodman can shake a stick at. Maestro, you ought to get a bigger stick or a smaller band. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, Mr. Allen.
Oh, yes, Kenny. Say, what is the matter with you? Where did you get that suit?
It's pretty sloppy, huh?
Sloppy? Why, Kenny, you are a herringbone nightmare.
It's my father's suit.
Well, are you sure he isn't still in it? I just saw something moving around in the back there. That suit looks like a shroud with sleeves.
I'm a mess, ain't I?
Yeah. You are a super mess, I must say.
Nice, thanks. Now look at my face. You notice anything peculiar?
Why, it's all blotchy.
Hideous, huh?
Ghastly, Kenny. how did you ever get the front of your face that red? Have you been smelling an electric fan?
No, I've been using sandpaper for Kleenex.
Well, it's no skin off my nose, as the man said.
You know what I wish, F.A.?
What?
I wish I was as repulsive as you are.
Oh, well, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know, Kelly. It's taken me a good many years to get to look like this.
Gosh, if I could only get the skin under my eyes to hang down like yours.
Yes? Yes, I have the only eyes in radio with knapsacks.
Oh, honey!
Yes, Purdy?
The mail is here with the dandruff. It's Collect.
Oh, thanks, Purdy. I'll be right back, F.A.
Well, who is this man with the Collect dandruff?
Kenny ordered some dandruff for his coat collar.
What's going on here? First, a baggy suit he has on, his face is all blotchy, and now dandruff?
Oh, Kenny's also trying to get dishpan hands and haystack hair.
Dishpan hands? You mean he's deliberately attempting to render himself revolting?
Yes. He's trying to make a bad impression on Myrna Hornbustle.
Who is Myrna Hornbustle?
She wants to marry Kenny.
What?
It's Mr. Annalick's idea.
Annalick? So Annalick, the confidence man in whom nobody has any confidence, has got his talons in Kenny again, huh?
They started another business together.
Oh, not again.
Yes, they're running a matrimonial agency for June Bride.
But where does Myrna Hornbustle come in?
She's their first customer, and Mr. Annalick guaranteed to get her a husband.
Oh, I get it now. She is probably buzzard bait. Annalick can't find her a husband, so he is trying to make Kenny take the rap.
That's why Kenny is messing himself up.
Well, darn that Annalick leading Kenny astray, making a racket out of marriage.
Marriage. Goodman is laughing, but not loud.
You know something about marriage, Maestro?
In my own house, I, Goodman, am wearing the pants.
Well, good for you.
I could go wherever I please if only...
If only what?
If only Mrs. Goodman, while I'm wearing the pants, would give me back the suspenders.
You're lucky she doesn't give you a belt, Maestro. Now, go away, go away.
Say, F.A.
What is it, Kenny?
How do I look with this dandruff on?
You look terrible. Kenny, stop this sartorial hugger-mugger. Just because you want to fend off this Myrna Hornbustle.
But I'm in a spot, F.A.
Well, can't you get somebody else interested in Miss Hornbustle, Kenny?
I'm trying, Porty. I'm mailing out her pictures to bachelors.
Her pictures? What do the pictures look like?
I've got one right here. See? This is Myrna Hornbustle.
Gosh, she's beautiful.
Oh, wait a minute, Kenny. This here is a picture of Hedy Lamarr.
Put a beard on Hedy Lamarr and you got Myrna Hornbustle.
Miss Hornbustle has a beard?
Van Dyke.
A Van Dyke?
A duplex Van Dyke. It has 2 points.
But a bride with a beard, you'll never get a husband for her.
Why don't you send out a picture of Miss Hornbustle in a pretty dress, Kenny?
You can't see her dress, Porty. It's a pretty long beard.
Why don't you call in the Schick Injector Razor Company?
I sent the Schick Company Myrna's picture, and they wrote back, try the International Harvester Company.
Well, if they give up, you certainly ought to.
Oh, I've got to keep trying, F.A. I'm not trapped yet.
What are you going to do, Kenny?
I've got to find somebody else to propose to Miss Hornbustle. There must be somebody.
Well, don't look at me. I've got enough troubles without ogling a bearded lady.
Then... Can I use the microphone for a minute, F.A.?
For what?
Well, Mr. Annalick wrote a commercial for Miss Hornbustle.
Well, if it's your only hope, go ahead, Kenny. Read your commercial.
Okay. Men, if you want to get married this June, don't shop around. Meet Miss Myrna Hornbustle. Myrna comes complete with hope chest, wedding ring, 4 pounds of rice...
And duplex Van Dyke.
Your druggist knows Myrna Hornbustle as Myrn, spelled M-Y-R-N. Remember, men, Myrna Hornbustle contains sulfur. She'll make the perfect match.
heard some insane things on the radio, but you and Analik have sounded a new psychopathic low.
Gosh, maybe that's a client already. Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Analik. Myrna wants her deposit back? Well, I just broadcast it. Tell her she'll start getting a fan proposal tomorrow. Oh, she wants a proposal tonight. Okay.
What's wrong, Kenny?
Somebody's got to take Myrna out tonight and propose.
Looks as though you're hooked, Kenny.
Well, isn't anybody going to help me? How about you, Mr. Goodman? Will you take Miss Hornbustle out for me?
First, you will have to introduce Miss Hornbustle to Mrs. Goodman.
And then?
And then...
Wait a minute. It's not that good. We both have to read it. I mean... one of us can handle it, I'm afraid. And then after Miss Hornbustle has been introduced to Mrs. Goodman, and then?
And then, like little Caporus in the fourth race at Belmont yesterday...
Yes?
Miss Hornbustle is getting scratched.
Maestro, you are the only man I know who speaks a perfect broken English.
Gee, if that's Miss Hornbustle, Kenny, I'll talk to her woman to woman.
If I was one of the Smith brothers, I could talk to her beard to beard.
Oh, hello, Mr. Analik. I... What? Miss Hornbustle's uncle died? She's inherited $3
million?
$3 million? Oh, well, look. I think I can take Miss Hornbustle out tonight.
Kenny?
Just a minute. Yes, Mr. Goodman?
It is just coming to me. Mrs. Goodman is broad-minded. I could take the Slearnik Hornbustle out tonight.
Oh, no, it's all right, Mr. Goodman.
I insist.
Oh, no, Mr. Goodman.
Yes,
Kenny. Now, wait a minute, boys. Don't argue, fellas. I've just been thinking I can take Miss Hornbustle off both your hands. I will take her out tonight.
I'll tell you what. We'll all take her out.
Good.
Hello, Mr. Analik. Tell Miss Hornbustle... What?
What's wrong, Kenny?
Mr. Analik says Miss Hornbustle isn't Miss Hornbustle anymore.
Well, who is she?
She's Mrs. Analik.
I should have known. Sing, Kenny.
The pale moon was rising above the green mountain. The sun was declining beneath the blue sea. When I strayed with my love to the pure crystal fountain that stands in the beautiful Vale of Trolley, she was lovely and fair as the rose of the summer, yet was not her beauty alone that won me. Oh, no, was the truth in her eye ever dawning that made me love Mary, the rose of the trolley. The cool shades of evening, their mantle were spreading, and Mary, all smiling, was listening to me. The moon through the valley her pale rays was shedding, when I won the heart of the rose of the trolley. Though lovely and fair as the rose of the summer, yet was not her beauty alone that won me. Oh, no, was the truth in her eye ever dawning
that made me love Mary, the rose of Tralee.
That was very nice, Kenny. You know, Jimmy, I've been thinking over what Dr. Bodenweiser, the horse dentist, told us a little while ago. You know, I think the doctor's got something there. Did you hear what he said about horse sense?
Oh, yes.
Now, there's one advantage the lowly horse has over the automobile, Jimmy. A car will never have horse sense. A car can't rise up on its hind wheels and neigh when a bridge is washed out in the dark at night. A car can't warn you when there's trouble ahead.
Oh, you're wrong, Fred.
Yeah?
An automobile does have a way of warning you when trouble lies ahead. A way of making it known when excessive engine wear may have taken place. And that warning is smoke. Smoke pouring from the exhaust pipe. Smoke may mean trouble that might call for a big engine overhaul job to fix. And remember, the danger of needless engine wear due to the sustained heat of longer and hotter trips from now on should be considered. So before your car becomes a smoker, see your Texaco dealer. He'll give your car a complete, safe lubrication with insulated Havoline. This Texaco premium oil is insulated to stand up under today's high engine temperatures that can break down ordinary oil and leave costly engine parts unprotected. Havoline is distilled, too, free from carbon-forming impurities that also hasten wear. So protect your engine now. Heed the smoke warning and change to insulated Havoline at your nearest Texaco dealer.
And now the Texaco Workshop Players. Tonight they present a Hollywood faux pas entitled The Great Studio Economy Wave, or Everyone Got a Salary Cut and the Boss Was the Knife of the Party. Music, maestro.
Hollywood, land of bedlam, bingo, and B pictures. Hollywood, hive of fanfare and frustration. Of all the bewildered studios that dot this sun-kissed center, the most inefficient and broken-down outfit is Clambake Productions Incorporated. Under the guidance of President F.A. Allen and 17 nephews, Clambake has hatched the most fragrant eggs in the history of the silver screen. Speaking of Clambake Productions, Jimmy Kidler, radio film critic, says,
Clambake Pictures is making a big mistake. Instead of releasing their pictures, they should release President Allen.
Adie LaFink, glamour girl on Clambake Lot, says,
I've been in so many turkeys, I'm beginning to look like a giblet. If my water wings didn't leak, I'd go back hostessing in swimming pools tomorrow.
Mr. Thurber Prawn, prominent banker who invested heavily in Clambake Productions, says,
it was a silly speculation, and I'm sorry. Still, I can safely say that
just
after all of these...
Just a minute, Mr. Prawn. What is that peculiar noise?
I say I invested my savings in Clambake Pictures, sir.
Yes?
Today, I'm whistling for my money.
You didn't quite make it at the end, but
yes,
thank
sir.
You, regardless. With disaster at his heels and creditors in a large bald spot in his hair, President F.A. Allen has resolved to economize to salvage his creaky organization. As we pick up President Allen, he is hurtling over the wolf outside his door and zooming into his office. Good morning, good morning, good morning, Miss Q.
Morning, F.A.
Yeah, things here at Clambake are tottering. The handwriting is on the wall.
Yeah? What does it say?
It says I've got to start a fresh economy wave.
You ain't cutting salaries again.
Everything that has been cut has got to be cut again. Take a memo.
Yes, sir.
As of now, no full-blooded Indians are to be hired for Western Pictures. We're cutting down to half-breeds. That's a 50% slash right there.
Yes, sir.
I'll take another memo.
Yes, sir.
Have all leading men turn in their old toupees at the front office. We can use those toupees to stuff office furniture.
Them pompadour toupees is going to be ticklish to sit on.
No levity, Miss Q.
Yes, sir.
We've got to cut down. From now on, I'm making nothing but sequel pictures. We can use the same costumes, same sets, and same publicity we used for the first time.
Which pictures are you making?
Well, I'm doing a sequel to Adam Had Four Sons. It's called So Did Crosby.
Are you doing a sequel to Blood and Sand? sand?
Blood and sand, yes. I'm calling it anemia and gravel. The biggest clam bake production of all, however, will be my sequel to The Man Who Came to Dinner.
What are you going to call that?
He also stayed for supper.
I thought you was going to spend a fortune on that.
I intended to, but I brought that famous French chef on from New York. What's his name again?
Marcel of McGinnis's.
Oh, yes. Marcel of McGinnis's. I caught him working in the window there and signed him my last trip to New York. Buzz for Marcel.
Yes, sir.
Marcel is supposed to cook the food for the big banquet scene in the picture. He has got to cut down on that banquet.
This must be Marcel now.
Come in.
Bonjour, Hervé, bonjour. Vous êtes sending for Marcel of McGinnis's?
Oui. I want to parler avec vous about le banquet scene in the cinema. He also stayed for supper.
Ah, oui. Marcel is preparing the meal terrifique.
That's why I sent for you, Marcel. We have got to cut down on the food.
But Marcel has the menu prepared. Crab leg canapé, soup du jour, turkey stuffed with goose, goose stuffed with turkey, chicken stuffed with turkey and goose, if it will go in.
No. No, no, we have got to cut down, Marcel. Economize. We have got to make it cheaper.
But you are bringing Marcel of McGinnis to Hollywood to prepare the big banquet.
I know. But you will have to cook a smaller meal.
Mais, Marcel, the reputation.
Look, look, Marcel, make up a smaller menu. We'll shoot the food in a close-up. The meal will look bigger.
Bon, Marcel will prepare the bargain menu. I will start with consommé.
Consommé is fine. Get busy, Marcel, and show some enthusiasm.
Oui, enthusiasm. I'm nuts about the good old consommé.
Good. Well, now we're getting someplace. Did you order those studio lunchroom cuts for the actors, Miss Q?
Yes, sir. We photograph and meat on bread.
Photographing the meat on through the bread and saving the meat, I see. Have there been any complaints?
Only Bolivar.
Bolivar? My star parrot?
Yeah, he's kicking about eating yellow buckshot for birdseed.
Dad, I've got to keep Bolivar happy. He's the only talking parrot in Hollywood. Bolivar's new picture, The Sea Hyena, will clean up. Come in.
F.A.
Nafra, my ace director.
I'm through, F.A. This is the last straw.
Why aren't you directing The Sea Hyena, Nafra?
Your star walked off the set.
Bolivar?
Yeah.
But why?
Well, you cut down on the parrot's food. He refuses to act.
Bolivar refuses?
He's gone on strike.
My economy drive is not going to be stopped by that poultry bottleneck. Where is Bolivar?
He's outside picketing your office.
He's picketing? One side, Nafra. I'll open that door.
Alan is unfair. Alan is unfair.
Now, just a minute. Just a minute, Bolivar.
I want to arbitrate. Where's John L. Lewis?
Now, listen, listen. Listen, Bolivar. Everybody in the studio here is taking a cut.
F.A. is right, Bolivar.
I'm a Polly, and you're a Crumb by golly.
Now, listen, Bolivar.
I don't have to take this. I got offers from Disney.
Why, you Technicolor buzzard. Now, here. Stop honing your beak on my desk.
Okay, I'll use this chair. Sorry, sister. I got to get glasses.
Now, this is mutiny, Bolivar. Bolivar, you get back to work.
I'll tell you, arbitrate, Alan.
All right. Now, what is it you want?
I want enough to eat.
All right.
I want my cage cleaned twice a day.
I'll get in there personally.
I want top billing in this picture.
It's yours. Now, go to work.
Okay. If I think of anything else, I'll be back.
Never mind that. Get back out on the set.
Okay. Here I go. Starting back to work again, and here I go. Acting like a jerk again.
And what a business. Business. What a business, an executive capitulating to a parrot.
You're overdoing this economy, F.A.
Nonsense. I'll save money if... I'll take that. Hello.
This is Salvin reporting from the cutting room, sir.
Yes, Salvin.
We're just cutting the road to Flatbush.
Ah, yes. The road to Flatbush. I eliminated negative expense. This picture was photographed on old celluloid collar.
That's why I'm calling.
How did the celluloid collar scenes work out?
Okay. But the word arrow keeps flashing across the screen.
Arrow?
Yeah, and every 2 feet, Bob Hope's head turns into a buttonhole.
Well, never mind, never mind. I'll get Orson Welles to put his name on it. People will think it's artistic.
Okay.
Gad, one crisis after another.
Voilà, Marcel of McGinnis, she's prepared for ship or bed you.
Good. Now, what are you serving?
Caviar, frog's legs, boiled beef, salad.
No, no, no. This dinner is still too expensive. It has got to be something cheaper.
Only one thing Marcel is cooking cheap. The cold buffet, the sandwich.
A buffet, great. I'll change the picture's title. The Man Who Came to Buffet. Get back to work, Marcel.
Oui, I'm nuts about the good old cold buffet.
Now we're getting someplace. Now let me see. What else can I cut?
F.A. Oh, F.A., this is terrible.
What's wrong, Napper?
The parrot.
Bolivar?
He's disappeared.
Bolivar gone? What happened?
I took him back to the set.
Yes?
I put Bolivar in his cage to run over his dialogue.
Yes?
I turned around to pinch the script girl.
Yes?
I did. She screamed. I turned back. Bolivar was gone.
Dad, without that parrot, we can't finish the Sea Hyena. Clambake Productions will be ruined.
Well, he was mad about your cutting down. Bolivar has probably gone to Disney.
We've got to head him off. Get him back. I'll call the police.
Voilà, Marcel of McGinnis is returned. The buffet is prepared.
Not now, Marcel of McGinnis. I have got to call the police.
Marcel is bringing the sample sandwich for you to okay.
All right, let me have a sandwich there. I'll take a bite.
Ici, monsieur. He is good, no?
Yes, sir. What is it?
It is the chicken.
It's pretty gamey for chicken.
Ah, but it is cheap Marcel is making for nothing.
For nothing?
Oui, I am finding the green rooster running loose. Presto, Marcel is cooking, making the sandwich.
A green rooster, Gad, I've just eaten Bolivar.
Why, it's impossible. How could you eat a parrot?
But I did, I tell you.
This is terrible. Are you sure, F.A.?
I'm positive, Gad. I feel indigestion coming on. I want to see John L. Lewis. Larry, will you read a letter for me?
Well, I'll be glad to, Fred. What's it about?
Well, this is National Fire Defense Week, Larry, and Mayor LaGuardia promised to come over tonight and say a few words to the fire chiefs of America.
Yes?
But the mayor is busy these days as director of the Office of Civil Defense, and this afternoon found that the pressure of business would keep him from joining us. So instead, he sent this letter, if you'll be kind enough to read it.
Surely, Fred. I quote, "My dear Fred, I'm sorry I can't be with you on the celebration of the 75th anniversary of the National Board of Fire Underwriters in this country. I had hoped to join, but it so happens that I've been assigned to duties which will take me away from New York on Wednesday night. Please give my greetings and extend my best wishes to the fire chiefs who, in addition to their normal duties, now have a real big job on their hands. Every fire chief should prepare and train an auxiliary force from double to six times his present force, according to the particular strategic location of his city or territory. I expect to give specific recommendations to them real soon. As ever, I know our fire departments will be ready to respond. It may be a one-alarm fire, it may be a fifth alarm, or it may be a tenth. Let the whole world know we are ready. Hoping to see you soon, I am sincerely yours, signed F. LaGuardia, Mayor." End of quotation.
I would like to thank Mayor LaGuardia for his kindness and to congratulate the fire chiefs of America on the excellent work they are doing to safeguard the lives and property of the citizens in their communities. And thank you for joining us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget, next Wednesday night, we'll have Leo DeRocher, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers. This is Fred Allen saying goodnight for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast and inviting you to drive in anytime. Remember, you're welcome.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. We have another one of these half episodes of the Jack Benny Show that we're playing today. But it's a very enjoyable half episode. The sound quality's really quite nice for the vintage of the episode. And there's a lot of interesting things that happen in this half episode. You can really start to feel the writing team of Ed Beloine and Bill Morrow starting to feel comfortable with the Jack Benny format and being able to twist it slightly into what it would become more next season when Phil Harris is added to the cast and so forth. And Ed Beloine actually makes a cameo appearance that, of course, he will later make a lot more appearances on later episodes. But it's neat to hear Ed Beloine's voice on this episode. It's interesting with only 15 minutes, the way that you get a chance. They're basically the whole cast appears within the first 15 minutes, so that's awesome. And then on top of that, it's just a fun and interesting episode overall. It makes you think of the fact that Jack, when he was alive, his daughter Joan Benny describes it as he lived, the 80 years he lived were some of the most interesting 80 years, like, in the history of our planet, really. And that's really true. He, of course, when he was born, there were no automobiles, there were no planes. And then as he's growing up, I mean, he was a courageous person to be able to take on vaudeville and become a success in vaudeville and then take on movies. And I think you could see the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to be a big movie star. So it was like, what do I do now? And I was just reading recently that Mary didn't want him. I didn't realize how much of it was kind of Mary instead of Jack. Mary didn't want him taking off with, he was in the, what was it? I can't remember the name of the Vanities. He was in the Vanities, and the Vanities would travel around, was going to start traveling around anyway, was a huge show, and he was making $1,500 a week, which was a lot of money back then. But Mary didn't want him to travel. She wanted him to stay in one place. She was tired of him traveling around the country. And one way to do that, of course, was to get a radio show. So he really tried to get radio going for himself. And, of course, eventually did. And so this is... It just reminds me of all the things that were going on here. I mean, you had him getting into radio, and at the same time, the ways that a performer travels around the country were changing so much that, you know, trains were definitely the big traveling mode, and then planes came along, and now they could travel in planes, and it's like, do you trust a plane in 1936, or do you still go by train? They mention a lot of different modes of transportation here with steamship and all the different ways you can get around. And I think that makes this episode interesting, and it makes you really think about the time that they're in. Another piece in this episode that I think is really interesting is Jack, for the first time ever and the last time ever, the only time I can think of, actually adopted a Jewish accent to read a letter that he gets. And so it's interesting to hear his Jewish accent on this episode. So, great episode. A lot happens in these 15, 16 minutes, whatever it is. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you next time for some more Jack Benny.
And now we bring to you the boss of our program, who leaves for California tomorrow, Jack Benny.
Fine. I'm leaving for California tomorrow, and they're playing Moon Over Miami. Certainly fits. Well, anyway, folks, jello again.
Say, Jack, I thought you told us last Sunday that you were tired of saying jello again. Now, can't you get something new?
I could, Don, but you see, I'm identified with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every radio artist is known by a line that he's made popular.
Now, what do you mean?
Well, if you were telling a story about radio people, you wouldn't say, Kate Smith and Rudy Valley went over to see Fred Allen and ran into Ed Wynn, who came in with Ben Burney and so forth and so on.
Well, what would you say, Jack?
You'd say, hello, everybody, and hi-ho, everybody. Went to see Town Hall and so came in with Yowza. Looked at how am I doing, big boy, and said, I'd like to spend this half hour with you. Then Jello again come in, that's me, Don, and met some beetle who opened up a bottle. You see, you don't have to mention names.
Well, I know, Jack, but how would you get me into that party? I mean, how would they know me?
By the big red letters on your nose.
Go ahead with the program, Jack.
Oh, yes, we've got to get through with this. Here we are, leaving for California tomorrow, and I have to start packing my clothes and everything. Gee, Don, you don't know how things accumulate. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes.
I hear you're going to California to make a picture. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Well, I represent the H&H Railroad. You have a company of 9 people, and we can therefore make you a rate.
Well, I was really thinking of going by air.
Well, that's all right. This train is air-conditioned, has air brakes, and goes through Arizona.
Well, that's enough air for anybody,
isn't it? Oh, not only that, but this is a scenic route. We go right through the Grand Canyon, the greatest sight in the world.
What time do you go through there?
Midnight.
Fine, I'll carry a searchlight. I suppose you go through the Holland Tube at noon.
Oh, yes. Hmm. Now, we can offer you a summer rate, a specially priced round-trip ticket, good from May 25th till May 27th.
Oh, it expires before I get to California.
Well, yes, if you want to get technical.
Oh. Well, I'll let you know. You see, I might want to drive out there.
All right, Mr. Benny. But if you change your mind, our road will take care of you. Remember, the H&H Railroad.
What road is that?
Hoboken and Hollywood.
Oh. Well, I'll remember that.
Thank you. If you decide to use our road, Mr. Benny, I'd advise you to get a round-trip ticket.
Why?
Your picture might be bad.
Some encouragement, huh?
Hello, Jack. Who is that fellow?
Oh, just a railroad agent. He wants us to take their road to California.
Not me. I've already got my ticket. I'm going by way of Bermuda.
Mary, Bermuda's in the Atlantic Ocean and California's on the Pacific.
It is. I'll kill that salesman.
Well, Mary, are you glad you're going back to the coast?
Yeah. And you know, Jack, I'd like to stop off at Chicago and see the World's Fair.
The World's Fair. That closed up 2 years ago.
I told you it wouldn't last.
Are you all packed and ready to go?
Yes. Come in.
Pardon me. I understand you folks are going to California. Is that right?
Yes, yes. What do you want?
Well, I represent the Nervous Aircraft Company. Why don't you fly there?
Why don't you fly there?
You're making a picture, not me.
Oh.
Now, here's a photograph of one of our planes. Look at those seats. Get that swimming pool.
A swimming pool on a plane? Then who are those girls?
They're in the floor show.
Well, that ought to be a pleasant trip.
Not only that, but did you ever see it rain up at you?
Rain up at me?
Yes, we go over some of the most beautiful clouds you've ever seen.
Oh, I suppose I'll have to stand in an umbrella. How long does it take to make the trip?
We guarantee to get you to California in 18 hours or more.
What do you mean, 18 hours or more?
Well, you generally get stuck in Kansas for a few days.
Say, Jack, maybe you can make your picture in Kansas.
Yeah. Well, sir, I'll think it over and let you know.
Okay. When you make up your mind, give us a call.
Hey, wait a minute. What type of airplane is that?
A tri-motor.
A tri-motor, huh?
Yes. We try and try and can get it off the ground.
Well, when you do, give me a ring. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, Mary, why does California have to be so far away?
They ought to do something about it in Washington instead of sitting there.
But they can't change the country around.
Nothing fits. Why don't they put South Dakota down south where it belongs?
Well, for that matter, look where North Carolina is.
Yeah, and what's West Virginia doing in the east?
I don't know.
And another thing, Jack. Why what? Wyoming, and don't bother me.
Well, you started it. I didn't say anything. Come in.
Pardon me, folks, but I understand that you're going to California. Is that right?
Yes, Wilson. What line do you represent? Here it comes.
Jell-O. I'd be sure to get a round-trip ticket with stopovers of strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime.
Well, well, and do you go through Kansas?
And even Cam says that Jell-O is the largest-selling gelatin dessert of the world, and every day millions of people eat it.
Pun my word. Play, John. Kenny Biker singing No Regret, with Johnny Grine playing the accompaniment.
Kenny Biker?
Yes, Kenny, that's what they call you in England. Do you know anything about London?
Sure, he's the governor of Kansas, isn't he?
That's Landon. What are you laughing at, Mary?
Landon Bridge is falling down, falling down.
Quiet.
All right. Say, Jack, here's a fan letter for you. Just came by special delivery.
A fan letter?
Mm-hmm.
It's from right here in New York, too, the Bronx. See, it says, Dear Mr. Benny, I've been listening to you with mine children week after week, and the way you talk all the time about Hollywood, it's a shame. All right, so Hollywood is nice, but what's the matter with New York? The way you leave out New York from your programs is very ignoring. All from, we hear from you is Hollywood, Hollywood. All right, so they make pictures there, but who looks at them? It's us. I wonder if I'm reading this right. So I'm asking, why don't you talk about New York once in a while? Signed, Mrs. Luxion Zoo. P.S. Fair. You know, Mary, she's right. Here's a city of 7 million people, and we've completely ignored it.
Yeah, let's do something that'll put New York on the map.
Absolutely. Say, Kenny, before you came east, did you ever hear of New York?
No, Jack. My father didn't tell me anything until I was 21.
And how many more children are there around in the country like that? So immediately after the next number, ladies and gentlemen, we will show you New York City, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, where men are men and women are fan dancers. The Gay White Way. Play, John.
Coming to you from the Paradox Cafe, Broadway and 49th Street, New York. Don't forget our $12 dinners and no cover charge.
Hey, driver. Let me off here at 47th and Broadway. I want to see the old gang again.
Hey,
Ah, good old Broadway. Look at those lights. And there's the palace. Gee, I remember years ago when I played here on the bill with W.C. Fields, Fanny Bryce, Walter Houston, and Shirley Temple. Ah, those were the good old days. Oop, here's one of my pictures playing at the palace now. Ah, what crowds passing the palace. Here comes my pal, George M. Cohen. Hello, Georgie.
Hiya, Rudy.
No excuse for that in these bright lights.
Hey, buddy, can you spare a dime for a cup of coffee?
Are you sure it's coffee?
Honest, mister.
Well, here's 40 cents in case you change your mind.
Thanks, you little mind reader. So long.
That schnozzle can't fool me. Nope, I'm wrong. There he goes into the automat. Think I'll drop in myself, see if I can find some of my old pals.
have a cup of coffee. Stay with me.
Hello, Jack, old boy.
Hiya, Tom.
What are you doing these days, Jack?
I'm on the radio.
Glad to hear. So long.
So this is the automat. Say, miss, let me have a quarter's worth of nickels.
Here you are.
Well, I guess I'll get a cup of coffee. This must be the coffee slot.
Number, please.
What's that?
That's a telephone slot. What are you trying to get?
Donuts. I'm really not used to this place. Where do you get the coffee, miss?
Walk down four slots till you get to the custard. Turn to your right and it's three slots past the cheese.
Thanks.
Shall I call a taxi?
No, I'll walk.
Hello, Jack. What are you doing here?
Hello, Mary. I just dropped over to see some of the old gang. What are you doing here?
I came over to eat, too.
Oh.
Where's the coffee slot?
Right there.
Give me a nickel, will you, Jack?
Here. Gee, what happened?
I forgot to put my cup under it.
Here's another nickel.
You better make it a dime this time.
Why?
I want to get a New England boiled dinner.
Here, Mary, get what you want, and I'll meet you over at the fourth table.
All right. Oh, miss, where's the ham?
You were just talking to him.
Oh, gee, that's good. You ought to be on our program.
Pardon me. Is this seat taken?
No, sit right down. Say, aren't you Jack Benny?
Yes, I am.
Well, pass the salt.
Here.
What are you doing now, Mr. Benny?
I'm leaving for California tomorrow to make a picture.
California?
Yes.
Well, I represent the Rolling Steamship Company. Why not go by way of the Panama Canal? 17 days of relaxation.
I see you roll and I lean over the rail and relax.
Why, there's nothing so soothing as an ocean trip. And look at the rates. $170, including meals. Pass the ketchup.
Here you are.
Is this seat taken?
No, sit down, Mary. What did you get?
Chicken pie. They were all out of apple.
Oh, Mary, this is Mr.
Pass the vinegar.
This is Mr. Pass the vinegar. He wants us to go by steamer through the Panama Canal.
Not me. I always get seasick.
But this goes through the canal.
Canals make me sick, too.
Oh, why don't you go home?
I get homesick, too.
Well, how about it, Mr. Benny?
I don't know. 17 days is too long, and I have to broadcast next Sunday.
Oh, that's too bad.
If I change my mind, where can I always reach you?
At the coffee slot.
Don't forget to put a cup under it.
Come on, Mary. Let's get out of here before any of our friends see us.
Hello, Jack.
It's Kenny Baker. Make believe we're looking for somebody.
Say, what are you folks doing here?
We're looking for somebody.
Me, too. I'm looking for the bean slot.
Hey, Kenny, don't tell the gang you saw us here.
Oh, you know me, Jack. In one slot and out the other.
See you later.
Oh, Jack, look, there's Johnny Green and his orchestra.
Where?
At the water fountain. I guess Johnny's treating.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Jolly.
Well, fancy meeting you here.
Oh, I just came in to see some of the old faces I used to know.
I came in to get some atmosphere for a song I'm writing.
Don't forget to put a cup under it.
Johnny, don't say anything to Wilson. He thinks I eat at the Ritz.
Okay.
Miss, let me have some nickels, please.
How many?
Six. Where are the Jell-O slots?
Down there where that crowd is.
Thank you. Oh, hello, Jack.
Hello, Wilson. Say, Don, come here a minute, will you?
All right, I won't tell anybody.
Oh, Jack. Jack, look who's coming in.
Pardon me, Miss Missy. Is this the automac?
Yes.
Well, give me some nickels, please.
Here you are.
They're stuck together.